Dad, you know how you were saying I need to do more, be more, the whole fast fiber thing?
Yes.
Anyways, I saw that Vox is offering free standard installation and activation to the value of 3,000 rand.
That is a good deal.
With the money you save, I can buy some new skins for Fortnite. Talk about money in the bank.
With free activation to the value of 3,000 rand. Live smart. Hack life. Level up with Vox Fiber. Visit vox.co.za. T's and C's apply.
I'm Richard Finneberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 254 for the week starting 24 March 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by techcentral.co.za. WhatsApp the show 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, YouTube Premium and YouTube Music launch in South Africa. We unpack it all.
Also on the show, Questair Free TV to take on ETV and the SABC. Microsoft to build antivirus software for Macs. We preview Apple's Monday keynote and our first thoughts on Huawei's Mate X foldable phone.
It's Sunday afternoon. It's 1 p.m. We're live streaming at live at techcentral.co.za and it's time to talk everything tech.
Oh, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So we've been missing the show for various reasons over the last couple of weeks. I think you were away in Durban for a bit. How was Durban?
It was very good, thanks. It was nice to touch the seaside, touch the beach.
Yeah, whereabouts in Durban were you?
Kind of in the main area there. I've got some people in Westville, so just in the main centre, you know. But yeah. Durban's always a lot of fun. It's such a nice little seaside town.
Yeah.
I will try and go back there as often as what I can.
Yeah, I grew up there. I love the place. Still an avid Shark supporter. but it's a bit quaint in some respects, I suppose. I also like it a lot. The humidity, though, I used to be used to it. But whenever I go down there in the summer now, I die of that heat.
It's kind of part of the novelty, I guess, for somebody going there on holiday, you know, kind of having that heat, and it's quite nice. But if you live there, you want air conditioners in your house, without a doubt. awesome. Coming from East London, you know, it's also a small, well, it was a small town, you know, Durban is just so much nicer, the water is so much warmer. All the little towns up the coast, you know, there's a lot to like about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're back with the show. Hopefully we are back regularly now, although there are lots of other projects on the go at the moment which are keeping me busy. And I'm sure, Richard, you're also hectic at the moment. It seems everything's happening right now. And there's certainly a lot to talk about in the technology space at the moment. We're going to dive into that in some detail now. But before we get to all of that, let's do our quiz.
The first question, Google has launched YouTube Premium in South Africa, which includes a subscription to YouTube Music. How much does it cost?
And which JSE-listed IT company this week delayed publication of its interim financial results by 3 weeks?
Questair Free TV has been granted a license to offer free-to-air digital TV in South Africa. What is the first channel it plans to launch, and in HD?
And Uber is getting ready to list. Which stock exchange has it reportedly decided to list on?
And the final question, which international company has acquired 23% of South African fiber telecommunications company, Metro Fiber Networks?
As always, the answers to the show, the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But let's dive into the news, because there's actually quite a lot to get through today and quite exciting stuff. We saw just this last week the launch in South Africa of YouTube Premium and YouTube Music.
I was so excited.
I signed up the moment the press release came through.
Yeah, same here. As soon as I heard about it, I went and handed over my 80 rand per month, I take it.
Yeah, for sure. 72 to be exact, which is cheaper than people in Europe and North America pay for YouTube Premium, which is fantastic. I think it's almost three times that price in the US. So Google showing us emerging markets a bit of love there. 72 bucks a month. So let's unpack this. For 72 rand a month, you get YouTube Premium, which means no ads. No pre-roll ads in YouTube, which for me justifies the price up front already.
Oh, yes.
Included in that, though, is a subscription to YouTube Music, which standalone costs 60 rand a month. So, in effect, you're paying 12 rand to get rid of the ads, and you get the YouTube Music thrown in. I think that's a very interesting and a very smart competitive move by Google, because they know they're up against they're in a big fight with Spotify and Apple Music. They haven't really done that well in streaming music relative to those two bigger providers. This I think is going to make a lot of people question whether they should retain their Apple Music or Spotify subscriptions. We're both Spotify users. You've signed up for YouTube Premium, so you're getting YouTube Music as part of the mix. Are you going to continue to subscribe to both, or will you ditch Spotify?
Yeah, I will definitely not ditch Spotify. Spotify is still a far more mature platform, and it's got a few integrations in things that I've just become accustomed to and I can't live without. So it's got integration into my DJ app, which I use all the time, like just to play music. It works very well with Shazam. I don't think YouTube Music is integrated with Shazam yet. There's a few other little things. I mean, I think YouTube, I'm not discounting or discrediting YouTube yet. I mean, it's still a very, as a music-only service offering, it's still kind of in its infancy, right? Mm. So it still has to kind of grow. Like you said, just for music alone, music videos alone, or just YouTube alone without ads, the price is justified. And that's how I'm looking at it at the moment. I'm not really looking at the music aspect yet. Only when I'm watching music videos on YouTube does it really kind of play a role for me.
Yeah.
But in terms of my music, Spotify, it's still my favorite app. It's just got so much more in terms of something for the audiophile, you know, in terms of how I categorize my music and all my playlists and the social aspect of it. I can justify paying for both at the moment, but Spotify will certainly remain my main audio player. So, how do you feel about it?
I haven't made up my mind. So there's a three-month free trial on Google Premium or on YouTube Music. So I've signed up for this, and it's 3 months free. So I'm gonna play with it for a bit longer and see if it is a compelling alternative to Spotify. I haven't tried playlist management in YouTube Music yet. I don't know if it actually does it. If just for firing up an album or something, there's no real difference between the two platforms. If you just want to sit at your desk and listen to some music, it's very easy to type music.youtube.com and just listen to a tune. Of course, there's an app for Android as well. I think there's one for iOS. So from that perspective, you know, they're equals, but you make some good points about some of the advanced functionality that you find inside Spotify that YouTube Music doesn't necessarily offer at this point in time, like advanced playlist management, which is one of the most powerful features. Also things like Discover Weekly and similar services that they've obviously been building over years and years and years. YouTube Music, well, you know, it's a new proposition in this market. It's kind of built out of Google Play Music, which interestingly is still around and you can still subscribe to it. I don't know. I'll probably make a decision in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm-hmm. I am a little confused with the Google Music / YouTube Music thing. I mean, are they going to become the same thing?
I think they're going to deprecate Google Play Music. I think the idea is that YouTube Music is the brand that's their new streaming service. I suppose they keep the other one in play because there are people using that, and you don't want to shock the system by telling people, "Oh, sorry, this is no longer available." But I suppose
Go for it.
I was going to say that they'll probably gently nudge users over to YouTube Music in time.
I'm sure you're right. The other thing I was wondering about, though, is audio quality as well. And this is something that I've just kind of started looking around. But from what I can see is that the YouTube Music still doesn't have that same upper-level audio quality that Spotify and some of the other music players have.
I stand to be corrected here, but I think it streams at 256 kilobits per second maximum, whereas Spotify is 320 kilobits per second maximum. I'm not an audiophile. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between those two streaming qualities.
Well, you would tell the difference, I've got some playlists on YouTube for music videos, because I love music videos, and I love to put those on once in a while. It's on the TV playing in the background. Great stuff. But the audio quality on some of these do vary a lot.
On the YouTube videos?
On the videos, yeah. So I kind of have to monitor my volume levels. I'm sure the music aspect when they pull the music just from an audio file would be different, right? But certainly the YouTube Music video side of things still needs a bit of work in that department. I guess because there's a lot of music videos on YouTube that's maybe not a new video. It's just kind of recovered from an old file or something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But I like it. And I like, have you played around with music.youtube.com?
You mean the website?
The website, yeah. And the app for that matter. I like the fact that you bring up an artist and it shows you their music videos amongst the other stuff, which Spotify doesn't do. If you want to, I forgot about that video from whatever artist. And you go through there. Oh, I haven't seen that video before, and you can play. And you know, it's quite nice, which Spotify doesn't offer, as far as I'm aware.
Sure. No, I agree with you. And that's why I love YouTube Music. I love the music, not having the ads pop up before my playlists.
Yes.
I still see them both serving a slightly different need. But if you're just a kind of a guy that just wants music, it makes a lot more sense just to have one package. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Then something like, you know, YouTube Music or the old Google Music, you know, kind of the integration would be sufficient. If their catalogs are, if their catalogs are big enough, I guess.
Yes.
And today, that's not really an issue, right? So everybody's kind of got all the music in any case.
Yeah. But still, I think it's a very clever play by Google. And people who haven't thought of using a streaming music service to date may very well be enticed into this through the ad-free YouTube experience. And hey, you get YouTube Music as part of it, and then it makes the market that much bigger and allows Google Music or YouTube Music to grab more market share. I think it's a very clever play, and I think it's a threat to Spotify.
Oh, very much so, especially at that price. I think that's also why they brought it in at that discounted rate for these markets. They want to give those those other brands a run for their money.
Yes.
But if we just look on the YouTube side, YouTube without ads is such a different experience.
It is. It is.
I consume YouTube generally a lot, many hours a day, and not having an irritating ad pop up 5 times a video sometimes, especially on these long podcasts that I listen to.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Oh, you're watching David Gilmour from Pink Floyd doing Comfortably Numb or something, and he's halfway through one of the greatest guitar solos of all time, and then an ad for Trivago pops up.
Yeah. And those things are inevitably like 3 or 4 decibels louder than the actual music video itself.
Yes.
But music videos, you know, we didn't really grow up with music videos in South Africa. We didn't have MTV and those things. We saw the odd music video in between open time ads, I remember. But I used to love watching music videos, and I never had that fix until later in life. We started sharing video files. You know, you started somebody's downloaded some music videos, and we'd share them like music files.
Yes.
And then YouTube came along, and you know, we could spend hours just kind of looking at old music videos, just clicking through, going. and I still discover stuff that I can't believe I haven't seen. And it's just a different experience, because the visual side to a music video is just a different way to experience the music. You want both.
We had a deprived youth, Richard.
We did. No internet, no music videos.
And by the time
barely had gaming.
And by the time MTV launched in South Africa, it was a shadow of its former self.
Yeah, it was all reality shows and
awful.
Repeats.
Remember that terrible show with Ozzy Osbourne?
The Osbournes. I was kind of into that initially. Who didn't love Ozzy Osbourne and his mad antics?
I think it was his wife that just drove me nuts. I couldn't watch more than an episode of it.
Now, look, it certainly wasn't good television. Let's just get that straight.
For sure. that killed MTV for me. Back in the days when it was, you know, when it actually showed music videos 24 hours a day, that was a great channel. You see, DSTV has killed VH1, by the way.
It quietly did. So I saw somebody posting a comment on Twitter, I think, and I was kind of surprised and very disappointed.
Not that I watched it.
I enjoyed it when I had DSTV. It was the only way to really, because also I like curated music videos, right? So, yes. I mean, I've got my own playlist, but like with any music, you do want like just a good list of whatever, whatever hits. Or I'm looking at the music.youtube now, so they've also got the playlists. So if you want some high energy music or just something to listen in the background, which is, you know, that's the way you want to consume music videos. And that's what, MTV and VH1 kind of missed, and that's why they went the other way with their content, unfortunately. They missed a trick. But I guess the internet probably also killed them.
Yeah. only now you get your music videos on there. What's that music video platform that did so well for a long time? I think it's still around. Is it Vivo? Something like that.
Vimeo, you're talking about.
No, not that.
Vivo's actually got a channel. They've got very popular channels on YouTube.
Okay.
So they are present, but I know what you're talking about. I don't think Vivo in its current form still exists. I could be wrong.
Maybe it wasn't called Vivo. Maybe it was something else. I forget. But a lot of music videos went onto that platform. It was a music video, online music video distribution platform.
I think you're right because, like I said, there is a big, like if you Vivo anything on YouTube, they've got massive, they obviously have licenses for these music videos, right?
Yeah.
You can't just make channels with these things.
Yeah. But yeah, YouTube, you want to watch a music video now, you go to YouTube. You don't go and switch on your TV and look for a music channel.
Mm. Oh, fantastic. Now, the other thing we should also note on that is that we don't get all of the premium content on YouTube.
Not yet.
That the US gets. Not yet, yes. The stuff that's on there wouldn't be worth watching, to be honest, yet.
I had a very brief look at their originals content, and it was very sparse, and I saw nothing I wanted to watch. It looked mainly like kids programming. But it'll develop.
Oh, for sure. It's still early days. Just the fact you don't have the ads, it's worth paying for. And I hope the other services take note. Imagine YouTube, imagine Facebook without ads for 40 rand a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or 10 rand a month or whatever. I would be interested to know how the back end works. How do they pay those? I mean, I guess instead of showing the ad, they just take that revenue, those 10 cents or whatever, and give it to the creator.
I guess so. So before
No, I was just going to say there's probably a lot more in it for them too, because if you're not a heavy YouTube user, you know, would you reach that 80 rand quota in terms of ad delivery? Interesting. That would be interesting.
Yeah. They're probably going to lose money on you and me.
Oh, yeah. My YouTube's running 24/7.
So very, very exciting news, I think. And I'm really glad to see them launch in South Africa. They also launched in India at the same time with similar quite keen pricing. I suppose one of the reasons why the pricing is so much lower is not just affordability issues in emerging markets, but also the fact that there is very little YouTube Originals content available at the moment.
Yeah, I think that is part of the play, but they have to be competitive, and I don't think they would have really made a dent for the mass consumer market if they didn't go at this price. If they were anything more, people would just go, but why? You know, because I spoke to a lot of people about it. When I rave about not having ads on my YouTube experience, I say, oh, we don't care, just give us an ad and we don't want to pay for it. It's all free, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of people will do that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They don't see the value in paying 100 rand or 80 rand or 70 rand.
Yeah.
Which you can understand. I mean, if you've got a music streaming service, which a lot of people do, you'll have one or the other.
Mm. So before we move on from all things Google, let's talk a little bit about the launch this week of Google, or the announcement about this new streaming gaming platform, which I think is integrated into YouTube, if I'm not mistaken, called Google Stadia. I haven't looked at it in a great amount of detail. But it looks potentially revolutionary.
Oh yeah, I think this is definitely the way that we're going to be gaming in the future. And they're not proposing a new idea. We've kind of seen this in various iterations of various publishers have tried this in the past. I think HTC many years ago had their gaming on demand streaming service. But it never launched. It never really took off. I think it was just too early days. But Google's also got a much bigger infrastructure, right? So what they're proposing is essentially a controller that's linked directly to the cloud. So it's like a Xbox-like controller, game controller, connects via Wi-Fi directly to the server that it plays that you're playing on, and essentially then streaming that video back to any screen. And then you can move from screen kind of effortlessly. And it's a subscription-style service. You'll be able to play anything, stream to YouTube very easily. So it's also catering to the streaming market. It's a very clever service. And considering what they want to do with video, or what they're already doing with video, now that they can do it with gaming, it's going to be pretty big. Look, they didn't announce pricing yet. That's not out in the public domain yet. So it'll be interesting to see how much. But considering you don't have to buy expensive hardware, wow. Now, that could sway a lot of console users.
Yeah. What does this mean for Steam?
Well, if you're a PC user, I mean, I guess if you're a PC, I don't actually know. You can play with keyboard and mouse too on this, yes. That's a very interesting point. Look, it depends on the licenses that they've got, right? So who's what are you going to be able to play on there? I'm not sure. I'm sure they're not going to have every game on there to begin with.
Yeah.
They're probably going to feature the bigger titles that has got the biggest kind of pull, you know, the big titles.
But in theory, you could play something like Battlefield 1, assuming they get the license for that, streamed over the internet.
Yes, exactly. That's it. I mean,
it's, and you don't need a PC.
You don't need a machine.
Or
you
a set-top box.
Well, yeah, you need a controller. I think you need something to connect to your TV. Obviously, there will be a box of some sort, probably.
Will there? Okay.
Or if you've got a PC, it'll also work. But yeah, it's going to make it so easy to play games and make it so accessible. Depending, obviously, you'll probably be able to let's say. Pay for some hours to play a particular title too. Mm. So if you only want to play a game, you know, a specific title like PUBG or whatever, you know, just pay for a few hours on that. There's a lot of really interesting ways that they can gamify gaming, I guess, making it easier for people to play.
It has the potential to open high-end gaming to the mass market, because at the moment, if you want to play a high-end game like Battlefield 1, for example, you need to invest a lot of money in hardware. You need to either you get a new Xbox or PlayStation, or you spend 20, 25, 30, 35 and upward grand on a high-end rig with NVIDIA or AMD graphics in it in order to play it. The promise here is that the infrastructure, the graphics processing infrastructure, is going to be sitting in the cloud. All the number crunching is going to happen there, and you're just simply going to need us to have a fast internet connection.
Well, not even that. Yes, you're going to need a decent internet connection. But now the beautiful thing is you're connecting with other people that are sitting on the same server, so there's no more in-game lag.
Right.
And that is a pretty big there's no more in-game latency between players, if I can put it like
that. Yes, I understand.
And that's a pretty big thing for gamers, because with PUBG, for example, I mean, we are playing with a high latency in South Africa, and it does impact the game because we don't have local servers.
Yeah.
With this, you don't need local servers. They just need a data center somewhere. Obviously, if it's local, it'll be great, but let's say even if it's in the US, you'll only be limited by your connection to that server, which with a fiber connection is sufficient.
Yeah. One assumes that at some point, assuming this is successful in the US or wherever they launch it first, that it will be rolled out to their data centers around the world, including South Africa.
Oh, definitely. Look, I would imagine they're going to do a Europe-US launch, because Europe would be a very good test ground for this kind of technology. And I'm sure, and, you know, they've got a massive console gaming audience out there.
Yes.
I would, coming back to your question earlier, I think it doesn't spell good things for the likes of Steam. But this is now another platform for them. So if they are on these platforms somehow, or if they license, I don't know what Google's plans are with, you know, titles.
Yeah.
But if this is a platform, it could work.
It's potentially very good news for game developers, because it broadens the audience massively, potentially.
Oh, yes. And look, remember, VR is also coming now. You're offloading a lot of that processing power off of your machine. So you don't need, and now you're integrating this technology into, like, glasses type or a phone, or, you know, this is the way that everything is going. You know, we've seen the movies where all your data is running elsewhere. You just basically connect to it with a little device. You just access the information.
We all know how hot those NVIDIA cards get, especially those high-end ones. It'll be quite interesting to visit the data center where all this is going to be powered from, and the air conditioning systems are going to have to put in to keep that data center cool, because this equipment is going to be running hot.
You make a good point. I mean, your PC does draw a significant amount of power if you run it all the time, and if you do game all the time. Not having that load on your home machine is another good thing, especially in a Eskom tight or electricity tight environment in South Africa.
Yeah. You could actually carry on gaming with an inverter when the power's off. Whereas you plug an inverter today into a high-end rig with a high-end graphics card, it's going to suck the battery out of that inverter very quickly.
Exactly. And this is the beautiful thing about the system. So your controller is connecting directly to the cloud, and I assume you'll be able to run it off a cable, powered or wireless. So if you need to charge it while you're playing, you can do that. Your screen, so let's say, for example, you're using an iPad or just a notebook or something, that as a screen, if it's just streaming something, doesn't require as much power as it actually doing the processing. So you'll be able to game for longer with the same technology you have now.
Yes. it's very exciting.
It's a killer. It's going to be an industry changer without a doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still going through all the articles where there is some backlash against it. I think there's a lot of people, or there is some people that's not quite too keen on this, especially that they consider they don't have all the information. But yeah, we'll see as the information gets out of Google what this is going to look like in real life.
Yeah. And of course it'll also allow them to, I'd imagine, to really start to take on Twitch, which is now owned, I think, by Amazon, through the YouTube platform, because, you know, if they own this streaming service, you know, they can simply put all these games on YouTube. And we know that watching video games is becoming a very big business.
Oh, it's massive. Yes. And from that point alone, this is, again, a game changer for them, because they can own the platform. It's much easier for creators to share and stream, meaning your 5-year-old niece and nephew could potentially just pick up a PC or iPhone and start a YouTube channel, which is a good and a bad thing. It could be a good or a bad thing, you know, depending on the situation. But they're making the tech very easy. Just looking at that on the one side as a content creator is fantastic. As a gamer, it's fantastic because you're offloading a lot of the processing power. As a consumer, you know, it's going to be a fantastic thing. For the industry, it might shake it up a bit, and I'm not sure licensing for the game developers. I would imagine that they could eventually essentially make more money because you're opening up your audience a lot more.
Yes.
But we have to ask the question about advertising and money after that. How would they make money beyond that? Because we know that they would want to make money off users.
Well, I was watching something very interesting last night. In fact, I shared it with you on WhatsApp. I was watching a guy. I thought he was an airline pilot, but he's not. He's actually just damn good at the simulator. He's playing X-Plane 11, which is, in my view, the world's best flight simulator for PCs today.
Yeah.
It's fantastic software. If you're in any way interested in aviation, you probably already know about it, but if you don't, check it out. and he streams live on YouTube, and he does flights every day, or at least every day on the weekend. I'm not sure if he flies in the week as well. But he sets up these flights, and then people watch him. So he goes through the checklists and all the buttons he's pressing in the 747 or whatever it is he's flying, and he shows you exactly what's involved in
awesome.
And he talks to air traffic control. Air traffic control talks back to him. He takes the plane off. He does the scheduled flight. Talking to ATC all the way, has a general banter with the people watching him. So the comments from YouTube are popping up on his screen all the time, and he's responding to them. And then he does something which I thought was very interesting, and it's not available in YouTube in South Africa yet. And in fact, it's the first I learned of it was watching this video. YouTube in the US now allows people who are watching your video, provided you're logged in with a Google account, to make donations to you if they appreciate what they're seeing. And he kept getting donations, $2, $3 here and there. Every couple of minutes, he was getting a donation from people who were genuinely appreciative of what he was doing. And this is the way he's making money. He does this for a living. I'd imagine that Google is taking a cut of each of those donations, probably 30%, which seems to be about the industry norm. And that potentially is a huge revenue model for Google.
Oh, it is massive, and that's what Twitch works on. There's a few other services. I mean, YouTubers in general can use that. They use other services to make that happen. So YouTube also recently, as you said, enabled that, and that's the future for content creators. I mean, getting little donations from people that want to support you, whether it's a monthly donation or just per video. Unfortunately, we don't have that year yet, but without a doubt, you know, it's just, you know, there's just some financial things that need to be worked out, I guess. But then they flip a switch and enable that. I'm looking forward to seeing that here in South Africa, because there's a lot of content creators that, you know, that they, if you only get 1,000 viewers on your YouTube videos, it's not really enough. You can't really make money off it. So if you do want to make a little bit more, you can kind of monetize in a different way. So if I'm watching it, I can just give you a one-off $10. Just to say, cool video, man. Keep going. That's how you want to support the local community.
Yeah, and I think it's a fantastic model, and I look forward to it being launched in South Africa. But watching this guy flying in X-Plane 11, I found it hugely interesting and hugely entertaining. So he's flying. He was looking out the windows. You know, he took off from Phoenix, Arizona, and landed in Los Angeles. And he was pointing out things as you go. Yeah, if you look out here out the left window, you'll see Palm Springs. And there was some cloud moving down the mountains. Graphics in Explain 11 are amazing. It was cloud moving down the mountain. The city was kind of obscured in a fog. And he said, and I'm very glad I'm not doing the approach into Palm Springs today. Carried on flying. Listen to him talking to air traffic control, doing the approach. Lining it up, landing, following the lines on the runway while talking to ETC, parking, doing all the checks, switching off the engines, etc. It was absolutely fascinating to watch. I'm sure not everyone's a flight simulator nerd, but I can see the same thing applying to just about anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a good segue to, I don't know if you saw anything about this new censorship bill that Ramaphosa wants to sign in, or I don't know if he has signed it in, about censoring content that you produce and putting it online. So it'll affect guys that want to do exactly what you're saying now. Streaming games.
I saw something about that, yeah.
Yeah, so there's always attacks on all fronts for people who want to create content. But that's worth keeping an eye on, I think. I don't know much about it myself, but I need to do some investigation and see what's going on there.
Yeah, I saw something about it. I haven't had a chance to look. Maybe this week I'll get a chance to have a proper look at that piece of legislation. But I think it's something to do with the FPB, the Film and Publication Bureau.
From what I understand, it will essentially require everybody who puts content up. So if you're streaming games and you're putting it up, you're going to have to get approval for each video or something. Like you're going to have to get everyone rated or something.
Sounds like another money-making racket.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
So if I fire up my phone and film myself for 5 seconds on YouTube, what, I'm supposed to get permission of the Film and Publications Bureau before I can take it live?
Well, I think if you're broadcasting content, so if you look at it in the context of gamers streaming, because you're streaming violent content, I don't think it'll affect you. Maybe it will. Maybe every bit of content you create will have to go through this. If that's the case, it's even more ludicrous.
Yes.
But I think it's aimed at guys who's broadcasting stuff, so broadcasting content you don't own potentially, or like games or other videos.
Now, it raises all sorts of interesting issues, though, because what if you happen to be playing Twitch and you're rebroadcasting? I suppose that then they go after Twitch and say that how do they do it? I mean, these things fire up on an instance on the internet, and you can't go through some sort of regulatory bureaucracy because, I don't know, the person who's doing the streaming might be swearing, or the game he's playing might have graphic content in it. It's just...
Yeah, I mean, trying to censor anything is just stupid to begin with. But, you know, it's the first... I don't think there's been much consultation around this, not from what I can see or have heard. When this popped up, it was something that came out of the blue. So somebody's trying to put a fast one, I think. Maybe we should look into it and chat about it next week in detail.
It sounds like yet another piece of legislation come up with by our government that is unenforceable.
Badly written legislation.
But we'll have a proper look and maybe have a chat about it next week. Talking about television and streaming, I attended an ICASA press conference this week. For some reason, ICASA has this habit of calling press conferences 3 hours before they're due to start. You know, most companies will give you like a week's notice or maybe 4 days at worst case scenario. No, not ICASA, 3 hours before the press conference. We're having a press conference. Drop everything you're doing. Anyway, luckily I was free at the time, so I went all the way through to Pretoria to their new offices, which I must say are much, much nicer than their old offices in Sandton, which were really getting quite old and tired. But they announced that they are licensing a new free-to-air television player in South Africa. The first time this has been done in 20 years. The last time we got a new free-to-air terrestrial television broadcaster in South Africa was when ETV was licensed back in 1998 or 1999. And that was the first time we saw a competitor to the SABC, which until the late 90s was the only broadcaster of free-to-air television, certainly on a national scale. So Quasar, there were about 4 or 5 bidders, and Quasar Free TV, which is 20% owned by Econet, which is the sister company, or actually the parent company, I think, of Liquid Telecom. They've launched Quasar in a number of markets in South Africa. And you remember last year or the year before, Rachat, that they launched Quasar Play, I think it was called.
Yes.
With the set-top box. What box was it? I forget the name.
It was a Roku box.
Yeah, it was a Roku box. I don't know how that platform has done, and I have one of their boxes here, but I haven't plugged it in quite a long time. But it's the same.
That tells you much, everything you need to know there, don't
you? Oh, with access to YouTube and all the rest of it,
exactly.
Don't really need linear TV, even if it is streaming. They own 20%. Econet owns 20%. I think there's a provision in the Constitution that prevents a foreign broadcaster from owning more than 20% of a local terrestrial broadcaster. I forget the exact phrasing of it, but they are limited through South Africa's legal framework. So Royal Bafokeng Holdings and a company called Mosson Capital are the other shareholders, making up 80% of the business. Now, they've been licensed to provide channels. They've got 55% of what's called Digital MUX 3, which is a big chunk of radio frequency spectrum for digital broadcasting. So these guys can't switch on until we've completed the rollover from analog to digital terrestrial television, which all seems to have gone quiet again lately. I'm not sure what's happening there. They're confident of getting on air relatively soon. I'd imagine they'd probably start to roll out sometime next year. I'm sure they're probably hoping for this year. But they're planning to launch, I think it's 5 channels, possibly 6. The first one will be Quest Sports, which is a dedicated 24-hour sports channel. That's going to be available in HD. And they're going to planning to roll out another 4 or 5 terrestrial channels, possibly in SD, focusing on other things like entertainment and that sort of thing. But an interesting move. You know, they're coming into a market that is a bit depressed at the moment. Certainly, if you look at ETV's numbers, they're not doing all that well. And certainly, if you look at the SABC, they're a bit of a train smash. But I think that's for reasons beyond just the commercial aspects of it. So they're coming into a market that is going to be a bit tough. But as being a free to air player, they're going to have to rely on advertising. I say, you know, if commercial enterprises are willing to stump up the cash to do this and risk their own money, let them go ahead. If they don't succeed, they don't succeed. But competition is good, and it provides more choice for viewers. And I think that there's still huge demand for free-to-air television in South Africa. A large percentage of South Africa's population is still not connected to uncapped broadband. So I think there's going to be big demand for it. Some people don't have the money or don't want to subscribe to DSTV, but they'd like more options available to them. There's, of course, OpenView HD, which is a free-to-air satellite solution, and I think there are some Quest channels on there, if I'm not mistaken, already. This doesn't even require a satellite dish. It just requires an antenna.
Oh, we know there's an audience for free-to-air TV. That's without a doubt, right?
Yeah.
People have the technology to consume it. Let's hope they have a strong plan for local content too, because, I mean, obviously local content is what drives a lot of, you know, good, a lot of the fan base for these channels, because people want to see local content with a mix of good international content too. We don't want to see 70-year-old Bruce Lee movies, you know what I'm saying? Chuck Norris, Saturday Night Actions.
Action Night on E.
Yeah. Look, they had their time, but, you know, you can only watch a movie so many times.
I don't watch linear television anymore. I just don't. And I'm so much better for it because we can plan our viewing here. In the past you'd sit in front of the TV and you channel hop and look for something interesting and you're actually just wasting your time. You don't have, there's so much streaming content available on Netflix and elsewhere that, you don't have the time to watch it all. So you actually have to do a bit of planning and so you look out for those good shows and you make a mental note of them or you actually write them down. When you sit down in front of the TV, you watch those shows because you know they're going to be good. And you're not wasting time. You're consuming great content. You're enjoying it for the most part. Sometimes there might be a dud. But you're not channel surfing. You're not arbitrarily just flipping through channels and watching garbage. I think that's certainly changed television viewing for me, and it's made it a more pleasurable experience and also waste less of my time. So it means I have more time to do other things.
Look, you're 100% right. It's kind of cut down all that frivolous time spending channel hopping. But now what we're wasting our time on is deciding what to order from the Uber menu, right? The Uber Uber Meals menu.
Uber Eats.
It takes you like four hours just to decide on what to choose. And then you can watch your program.
Uber Eats is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Delivery too is also very good. They've got a big range of restaurants.
They are. It's fantastic. And I actually use them a lot when there's load shedding. Because your microwave doesn't work, your oven doesn't work, so unless you're lucky enough to have a gas oven. And you don't want to go out because all the traffic lights are out and your garage door doesn't open and all the rest of it. So Uber Eats or Mr. D Food, and they deliver promptly.
You often hear those little scooters driving around. Oh, that person down the road's ordering Uber Eats tonight. You can just hear these little scooters.
Yes.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd actually love to. I should actually ask them what the impact is of load shedding on deliveries. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a huge spike in Uber Eats and Mr. D Food deliveries when power goes out.
Yeah, well, look, you get two kind of people. Those that would stay in with the candles or the lights and not cook and order in, and those would go out. I think most people would stay in and just order in from somewhere.
Yes.
But what we really need to start seeing on that note is just, you know, we've almost got a massive infrastructure on people on scooters who can pick up and deliver things.
Yeah.
You know, you can see where this is going. Like, we've got a few other apps. I think OneCart is one of them that offers a similar service, but you can order from shops, so you can order groceries and things. I would like to see a broader thing. Oh, I want to pick up this thing from that shop. Please, can you go and get it for me? You know, just that would be pretty cool to see.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how we went from Quasar Free TV to Uber Eats and Mr. D Food, but there we go.
It's all disruptors.
Anyway, I look forward to seeing what Quasar TV has to offer. I must plug that Roku box in again and see what's on there, because I'm sure they've made some major updates since it was launched. I used it for a few weeks just to learn how it worked and all the rest of it, but I didn't find the content compelling enough for me to warrant keeping it connected to my TV. But it has been some time, so let me hook it up and report back next week on what it's looking like.
Awesome.
So this one caught my eye this week, mostly because it's humorous. Microsoft is building antivirus software for Macs. I didn't know Macs were supposed to get viruses.
Well, yeah, apparently I haven't used Mac for a while, but yeah, apparently there has been a few threats to it. I guess the threat is always you forwarding or you just, you know, infecting somebody else on a Windows machine. So it's kind of in their interest, I guess, to stop it in its tracks if there is any such threats. But yeah, it's quite funny. I mean,
it is.
Yeah. But there are a lot of titles available for antivirus on Mac.
There are.
We know Microsoft antivirus on Windows is pretty good, right? I don't run any other virus software, I think. I haven't had for a while, actually. I'm running Windows in-house software, and it's working very well.
Yeah, there's no reason not to use it. I think it's pretty good. In fact, I've seen some security analysts saying you shouldn't use third-party software. The one in Windows is more than adequate. In fact, if you install third-party ones, especially from lesser-known vendors, you're actually putting your computer at risk. I run Bitdefender, which is regularly voted as the top antivirus for Windows. But I don't think you need it. Honestly, don't think you need it.
Yeah. You just have to be a vigilant user and just don't go to those dodgy websites, and then you'll be fine.
So... yeah, I don't know how many Mac users are going to. I think it's probably aimed at businesses that run Macs rather than end users at home. I don't think your average Mac fanboy is going to install a Microsoft antivirus solution, but maybe in a corporate environment where the IT department has to manage a field of Macintosh computers, then there maybe that's what they're aiming at, and you know, selling those enterprise agreements. Hey, here's some software to protect your Macs, and it gets installed. I would imagine that that's their focus.
And it's a very nice add-on for your Office 365 subscription, remember? So you can just roll it out with your next Office update too. So it makes it for the business side very easy, and then it's an easy sell to the guys already using their software, which, again, makes sense considering you want to protect your emails within Outlook, right? So you don't want those infected emails to be forwarded to other people. I mean, you want to stop it in its tracks. So.
Yeah. But it's interesting, and I think it once again just shows that Microsoft is becoming a multi-platform company, and we know this. I mean, they're actively developing apps for iOS and Android, and I think this is just and of course, Microsoft Office itself is now basically on feature parity on Windows and Macintosh. So I think that I think it's just a continuation of that strategy to no longer just be a Windows platform developer. They're a cloud software as a service provider, and that means the platform is much less relevant than it used to be.
Yeah, and they're also taking ownership of everything. Like you said earlier, it's not always the best idea to run third-party antivirus software, and they're obviously just trying to make sure that they creating their own little garden, I guess, of, because they can also dig much deeper into their own operating system.
Yes.
So it makes sense from that point of view.
Yeah. I still find it amusing, though, that Microsoft is developing antivirus for Mac. But there it is. We live in 2019. The world is full of strange and wonderful things. speaking of strange and wonderful things, we've got the big Apple keynote tomorrow night. Are you going to be watching, Rehat?
Yeah, I might tune in. I might tune in.
We are expecting...
I'm not such a big fanboy as what I used to be. It's surprising. But yes, I'm interested to see what they know.
Yeah. So what we know so far is there's going to be two announcements. One is for following that acquisition they made of that company whose name has slipped my mind. They're planning to launch a subscription magazine service. So you'll pay a certain
BuzzFeed.
Amount.
BuzzFeed.
No, it wasn't BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed was bought by someone else. I also forget who. But they bought a small company that provided the sort of service. So basically what they're going to offer is you pay a certain amount per month. I don't know, maybe $10. They haven't announced it. You get access to a library of magazines on demand.
Cool.
So you don't subscribe to individual magazines. You pay a set figure.
All right, yeah.
And you get access to 400, 500 titles or whatever it is. It's an interesting model. We're keen to see what magazines are included there. The biggie that's coming tomorrow, supposedly, is Apple is launching a competitor to Netflix. Apple TV, I presume it's going to be called. Well, that's the name of their set-top box as well. I think they'll probably call it Apple TV. The reports suggest they've been feverishly signing up content providers in recent weeks. And this is going to be a direct challenge to Netflix. And it's going to be interesting to see how well they do and whether the service is comparable, what differentiates it from Netflix, and whether Apple's going to be successful. My guess is it's only going to launch in the US to start. I doubt we're going to get it here in South Africa immediately. But maybe I'll be surprised.
It looks like US market is a massive one for any of these big IT companies to get into, right?
So yeah.
You know how big Netflix survives on the US on the US market without a doubt. So Apple is just encroaching and seeing it's got an audience. It knows it's got a very nice set of users, and they will all likely switch if the library is compelling enough. If they've got all the big shows,
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The other player, obviously Hulu in the US, that's the only other competitor we don't really have in South Africa. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
HBO, of course, is also launched now.
Oh, yeah, HBO and Amazon.
And Amazon, yes, that's available here. Although Amazon's content library isn't that great.
They've got a few nice exclusives, I believe, but yeah, I'm not a subscriber.
They've got the Grand Tour, which I like, but it's not enough to justify a subscription in my view. But yeah, it's interesting times. If Apple is serious about taking on Netflix, they're going to have to go global and they're going to have to do it quite quickly. I can't imagine that they've put the infrastructure on the ground in markets like South Africa already to allow for a global switch on. But I'd imagine that it would be here within a year at most.
Well, you can buy rent videos on iTunes still, can't you, as a South African?
You can. I don't know if they've got any infrastructure in the ground in South Africa. I think you're just connecting to servers in Europe and the US. If you're going to do a streaming service properly, you need to put down a content distribution network in South Africa, like Netflix has done.
Well, we've got some pretty big data centers here, so it's not impossible to imagine that they could do it. But I agree, they generally don't launch something like this to all countries. You know, they'd roll out to a few of the big ones and then, leave it for later for us.
So this will succeed or fail, I think, based purely on the quality of their content and the pricing of the service. I don't think the Apple name is going to lend this a lot of credibility. It's going to have to be cross-platform. I mean, they're obviously not going to offer this as a Mac exclusive. You can only watch our service on a Mac. You can't watch it on Windows or something like that. I mean, that would make no sense. I don't think the Apple brand is necessarily going to lend a lot of weight to the success of something like this. I think it's really going to live or die by the content and the cost of it to consumers.
Well, they do have a few cards up their sleeve, right? I mean, Pixar, Disney,
Disney's doing its own thing. They're launching their own stuff.
You're right, sorry. But Pixar, at least, or some of those animations, I'm not sure what
Pixar's owned by Disney now, I think.
Oh yeah, they're not even involved with Apple, so I got that one completely.
Used to be. Well, they used to. It used to be Steve Jobs, and then when he rejoined Apple, he sold Pixar to someone else.
Completely. So not you don't have shares in it. So there's not potentially. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Disney could be the big threat here because if they pull all their content from all of the platforms, it's. But, you know, I've always said that you probably have one or two, you probably have two or three services to begin with, you know, if you, because, you know, Netflix is kind of the standard. And then if you want something specific on another service, like if you want to watch the Grand Tour, if you want to watch Now Soon at Disney, you probably have to subscribe to that specific service.
Yes.
We'll probably live in a future, we'll see a future where these, all of these big houses, or the big movie houses would have their own platforms and just that's how you get the movies through them directly.
Yeah, it's there's a splintering of things here, and I think we're all going to have to end up subscribing to two or three services to get the content mix that we really want. It's not going to be a case of okay, we'll subscribe to Netflix and I'll be satisfied. You're probably going to have to subscribe to Netflix, possibly to Apple, maybe to HBO.
Then Google Stadia, then your music subscription, then your YouTube subscription. I mean, your monthly service is going to go like 20% just to subscription services.
Yeah. Which these companies.
Although mine probably also already does. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a case of, you know, you sign up for stuff and you're quite aggressive in cancelling when you need to.
You can, right? You can do that.
I mean, I'm tempted to re-sign up to Amazon Prime Video just so that I can watch a Grand Tour and then unsubscribe again.
So, I do that with Showmax. So I use Showmax on a few months and watch a few things, and then I stop once I don't. I would always keep Netflix because there's a lot of...
It's too much. There's a lot on there. Yeah.
Good stuff on there, But that's what I love about it. You know, you're not hooked into anything. You don't have to... It's just there.
Yes.
Fantastic. The way it should be.
Absolutely. So our last story of item of news this week was Huawei invited journalists to their offices in Santon this week to have a look at something very special, and that's the new Mate X foldable phone. And I got hands-on time with this thing very briefly. There was a lot of demand. There was only one of them. It is only one in the country. I must say, I'm starting to come around to this idea of foldable phones.
Are you swayed?
I'm getting there. I certainly wouldn't be buying this one, the first generation. And I did notice that it has a plastic screen. So when it was under the spotlights in the Huawei offices, there was a lot of unpleasant reflection off the screen. And I think the screen technology has a long way to go before it's properly refined and ready for the mass market. I also wouldn't be buying one of these things because they're hideously expensive. We were looking at around 40,000 Rand for a phone. Which doesn't make sense. But you know, it's Gen 1 technology. The price will come down as the manufacturing volumes go up, and they'll perfect it. But for a Gen 1 device, I have to say I was genuinely impressed with this thing. Folds away to a 6.6-inch smartphone, which is a good size, and opens up to this really decent-sized tablet-like form factor. I think they still need to do a lot of work on the software, although clearly they have already. Android 10 is going to support this stuff out the box, as it were. I'm impressed. And I think they've taken an early lead over Samsung in terms of the design of this thing. I was impressed. It was amazing to see a phone bending like that. I may get one at some point in the future, but it certainly won't be Gen 1 and probably won't be Gen 2 either. I think it might be ready for prime time around 2021 or so.
That's a prediction we'll put on the records and report back on, right? Yeah, but I do think there's a fantastic market for it. It makes a lot of sense to have a foldable, because again, this is just paving the way for, you know, bigger foldable screens for other applications, something that you can pull out like we've seen in the sci-fi movies, you know, just put out something out of a little scroll and then you've got a massive newspaper size screen in front of you. I love the idea.
Yes. Not quite newspaper sized, but I get where you're going with that.
That'll be the projector technology, sorry, the hologram.
But cool, it's very cool tech, and it's great to see innovation happening in the smartphone space again.
Oh yes. Something interesting that's really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
But I think early adopters and those guys that want to show off, it'll be fine for them. But yeah, I'm still happy with my little phone. I'm not going to change yet.
Mm. So that's our news this week. It certainly was a action-packed news diary there. But let's move on to our picks of the winner and loser of the week. Our winner this week is Google for bringing YouTube Premium to South Africa at last.
Yeah.
It used to be called YouTube Red, right? And then they rebranded YouTube Premium. And bringing it to South Africa at a very good price. Thanks, Google. Thanks for looking
out. Yeah, YouTube without ads, best thing ever.
And our loser this week is Ruben Motlotlocha, who is the former chairman of ICASA, who was removed by the communications minister this week after he was convicted of fraud involving the land bank. He's been sentenced, I think, to 20 years in prison. He has indicated that he's going to appeal that, but he hung on as long as he could as ICASA chairman, despite the fraud conviction, despite Parliament wanting to get rid of him. He hung on for as long as he could, and who knows why, maybe collecting his paycheck. But he's now been fired. The convicted fraudster Ruben Motlotlocha. Good riddance.
Yeah.
What's your pick this week, Rachat?
So I have finally, it's not a major pick, but it's kind of changed my life in a little way. I bought a wireless charger for my phone. And it makes such a huge difference that you don't have to plug that little cord in every time you want to charge your phone. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you use one, but it's kind of been a big thing for me. So I'm now a big advocate of wireless charging pads.
Yeah.
But what I would recommend is, especially if you've got a higher end phone, you need to make sure you get one of the ones that support a quick charge or one of those kind of features. Yeah. Not all of them do. But I think the highest rating you can get is a 10 watt charger. I could be wrong. If there is a higher one, I would definitely like to know about it. But this one is a 10 watt, and it works with, so if you've got a 10 watt or higher physical charger for your phone, it'll then push it through at a slightly higher rate. But I use it just for bedside kind of, just put it down in the evening.
It's very handy.
Charge. Mm. Yeah, it's very handy. And with the battery lasting on these Huawei phones lasting so long, you know, it's just nice for when I need it. It's there, just drop it down.
So what did you get? Was it the original Huawei accessory or did you get something else?
No. So this is a Romos WF02. It goes for about 250 Rand or so.
Okay.
But I got it specifically because it supports QI charging, which is a 10 watt fast charging.
Right.
Obviously, your phone can do much higher. I think the Huawei's are rated at 6. It's got a 60 watt charger, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's 45. I think the Mate 20 Pro is a 45.
It's a 45.
Yeah.
I've got a few 45 watt chargers, so obviously this one will still only push out 10 watts. But again, it's not intended. If I want to do a quick charge, I still have my original charger, so I still use that. It's still plugged in for when I need a quick zap. But this is just nice for, again, the overnight charging, just leaving it on the pad, doing its thing.
Yeah, very useful.
I've got
one of my Samsung Galaxy S8, which still sits on my desk, charging away all day.
Nice.
And it's trickle charge, but it's fine. It's fine.
It makes
it up over time.
Exactly. Now, the other thing that made me think of this too is you get these wireless chargers for your car as well, and that kind of mitigates the need to have both your charging and your audio output if you're still using 3.5mm audio for your car.
Mm.
So I can actually plug this into my car as well and then use my 3.5mm audio jack and charge my phone at the same time.
Nice.
Which is pretty handy.
Yeah. Nice. My pick this week is an app which I think either you or I picked quite some time ago, but I'm going to I'm going to pick it again because it's timeous, and a lot of good work has been done in developing it, and I've been using it extensively in the last week. You can probably guess by now. I'm talking about Eskom's Push, which is a brilliantly named app, which really just gives you updates on load shedding and gives you a forecast, shows you the different stages for your area. I happen to be on City Power, and it's good. Just gets its job done. It sends you alerts when you need them. It's a simple interface, done well, and I'm not sure who the developer is, but they've done a good, very good job with it. So they deserve a second pick. Eskom's a Push. If you're not using it, you should be. If you're
they recently upgraded their service too, so there's no more outages on the app itself. There was a time when all the outages came back, but the app just couldn't manage to load. But they also have a great little news section. So just anything interesting pops up on top from time to time, which is great. Yeah, definitely the most used app in South Africa right now.
if anyone hasn't heard of it, though, grab it from the App Store. It's for iOS and Android, right?
Yeah.
great little app, and hopefully load shedding's gone away now. There's no load shedding today. We're recording this on Sunday, the 24th of March. First time in about 10 days, I think, that we haven't had load shedding. Long may it last. Last week was very, very painful, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It's incredible. I just don't understand what they should be doing. Just as my little final note here, they should implement every day 2 or 3 hours for everybody, just across the board, so we can all plan properly. You know, it's if this thing changes every second day and you don't know where you're going to fall and you can't really make provision for working from home, if you're a freelancer, for example, or working from the office if you don't have generator infrastructure.
Yeah.
We just need a better plan to execute this thing. Load shedding could be quite fun. Sorry. I mean, you know, it's a nice break away from the screen when I don't, you know, if I plan it properly, then I use it as that excuse to not focus on my computer, which I see as a blessing.
Yeah.
It's still not a good thing, but, you know, trying to make light of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't focus on your computer. I just haul out my battery packs and carry on.
I was going to chat to you about your big battery setups you got there. I need to get one of those, I think. Because that's the only way you can keep your machines running.
Inverters, big inverters, yeah. And they run relatively quietly. Well, certainly very quietly next to a generator. But good luck finding one in South Africa right now. I believe there is no stock anywhere.
So we can bid on yours then. I think you got two, don't you?
I do. Should I put them on bid or buy or something and see what I get for them?
No, hang on. I was actually skimping for myself there.
Opening bids at $500,000.
Look, you can be standing outside in the corner of your road selling electricity to people who want to just charge their devices.
Yes.
It could be quite funny.
Great. Well, I think that's almost our show, apart from our quiz results and our song pick, which I must still line up. What are we going to use, YouTube Music or Spotify to play this today?
Well, I've got this. Well, it's up to, let's do it. I don't think this it could be on Spotify, on YouTube. Let's actually check. That's a good point. Let's see if it's – because this is South African band, Shadow Club.
Yeah.
Let's see. I know they are definitely on Spotify. Let's see if they are on YouTube Music.
Yeah, I'm having a look here. Shadow Club, that's the name of the band.
Shadow Club.
I'm just bringing it up here in Spotify. Should we do the quiz results in the meantime?
Sure. Let me go for the first question. Google has launched YouTube Premium in South Africa, which includes a subscription to YouTube Music. How much does it cost? And the answer is 72 Rand a month or 71 Rand and 99 to be precise.
And which JSE IT listed IT company this week delayed publication of its interim financial results by 3 weeks? And that's EOH. Can't catch a break, that company.
Yeah. Third question. Quayset Free TV has been granted a license to offer free-to-air digital TV in South Africa. What's the first channel it plans to launch and in HD? And the answer is Quayset Sports. Let's just hope they get the good licenses, right?
Yeah, indeed. I don't think they're going to be going up against multi-choice for things like rugby, though.
Yeah.
Uber is getting ready to list. Which stock exchange? By the way, it's rumored it's going to have a market cap or the indicative market cap of $120 billion.
Wow. And it still doesn't own many cars, right? Doesn't own any cars.
Except for a few self-driving ones, I think.
Oh, yes.
Which it uses for testing. But which stock exchange has it reportedly decided to list on? And that's the New York Stock Exchange, which is interesting because most of these tech companies go for the NASDAQ.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. And the final question, which international company has acquired 23% of South African fiber telecommunications company, Metro Fiber Networks? And the answer is Stoa Infra and Energy.
And that's our quiz, and that's our show. Rachat, we are playing out with your pick this week. As we already mentioned, it's a band called Shadow Club. I don't know them, actually. And a track called...
Ballarama, absolutely fantastic South African band. I saw them live for the first time last year, just at a small little gig when they were actually launching this album. And recently, for the last 2 weeks, I've just had this on rotation. It's just such a great album. And this is my new favorite track called Ballarama.
Ballarama. We are playing this from Spotify mainly because I couldn't get YouTube Music up fast enough on my screen. But we'll try YouTube Music to play it next week.
It'll be interesting to see if they are on there. But
Yeah. From Richard and myself, until next Sunday, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao. I'm in Atlanta.